At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Welcome, everyone, to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. I am your host, Jimmy Traina. Thank you for tuning in. Great, great episode we got for you today. First up, you're going to hear from Andrew Siciliano of the NFL Red Zone channel on DirecTV and NFL Network. And after Andrew, you're going to hear from Renee Young from WWE and now FS1, hosting a new show called WWE Backstage, which debuts on November 5th at 11 p.m. on FS1. Both were great interviews. Let me give you a little background here quickly on Andrew. If you listen to this podcast regularly, I did an episode where I explained why I canceled DirecTV after 20 years when they put 20 holes in my roof and wouldn't reimburse me for the damage when they moved the dish. So this was my first football season without Sunday Ticket in 20 years. I was a customer since 1999. So I thought I'd get through the year with Red Zone and because, you know, everyone loves Red Zone. Everybody loves the Red Zone. So I'm like, okay, I'll do Red Zone. I'll go to sports bars. I have friends. Hi, Sal Akata. I know you're listening. He lets me come over every Sunday to watch it because he has a Sunday ticket. And, you know, I figured I'd manage. My thinking, too, was that 1 o'clock would be the problem for me on Sundays. 4 o'clock, the best game is always on TV at 425 nationally, and then I could stream something illegally if I need to at 425. But 1 o'clock, you have a lot of games. You need to be locked in. So I'm figuring it out. Figured Red Zone would play a part in it. Started to watch Red Zone, not for me. I'm not saying I think the Red Zone is bad. I'm not saying the Red Zone sucks. I'm saying it's not for me. When you've watched Game Mix for 20 years, it's hard to then go to the Red Zone. If you've never watched Game Mix, you probably love the Red Zone. But I watched Game Mix for 20 years, and then I had to do Red Zone. And then this Sunday was bad because in New York, when the Jets and Giants play at the same time, they both played at 1 o'clock. Those are the games you get on CBS and Fox. Their games usually stink. They're unwatchable. I want to watch the better teams. So, you know, it's a sports bar Sunday. And I didn't really feel like going. It was raining. My dad's had some health issues, blah, blah, blah. I wanted to stay home, but I had to go to the sports bar. Anyway, so I took to Twitter, as everyone does, and I tweeted, quote, "I've held up better than I thought I would without Sunday Ticket after canceling DirecTV, but days like today when both awful New York teams play at 1 o'clock are the worst. Bars here put those games on the majority of the TVs with the sound. It's basically torture." And then, of course, when I tweeted that, I get 9 million tweets from people saying, watch the Red Zone. Why don't you watch the Red Zone? Red Zone, Red Zone, Red Zone. And then I finally made a confession that I didn't want to make on Twitter because I know everyone loves the Red Zone. I held off on weeks. And then I finally did it. And I said, going to get this out of the way now, make my confession, never address this again. I'm the only person in America who hates the Red Zone. I know everyone thinks it's the greatest thing ever, but it's useless to me. I know this is blasphemy and I broke Twitter law, so please forgive me. Now, hate's is strong. I should not have said that. It's not for me. That's all my ultimate point is with the Red Zone. Cut to Andrew Siciliano, who hosts one of the Red Zone channels, saw my tweet. I didn't realize, I think, that he follows me on Twitter. And he responded as nice as a human being could possibly respond and basically said that he's not offended, which, of course, he should not be because the popularity of the Red Zone speaks for itself. And I know I'm in a teeny tiny minority by saying that it's not for me. And Andrew really handled it as well as, like, this is how you're supposed to handle things. If someone doesn't like something you do, they're entitled to that, and you don't have to be offended. Here's what Andrew wrote. It's okay, Jimmy. There's no need to apologize. Truly not offended. I hate wrestling. We all have our likes and dislikes, obviously, because I'm a wrestling fan. So it'll be fun because we're going to go from Andrew, who doesn't like wrestling, to Renee Young, who is a big part of wrestling. But that's the backstory. And Andrew was phenomenal. Came on even though I had tweeted that. And we have a great conversation about Red Zone and his gig there and the popularity of it. And then Renee talks about a lot of WWE stuff. And we get into many topics with her. So that's the podcast. Last week, Bomani Jones was on. If you didn't listen to it, go into the archives and check it out. And as always, please subscribe, rate, review. If you've first-time listener or you haven't subscribed, please subscribe. Helps tremendously. All right, enough of me. Let's get to my great guest this week. First up, from the NFL Red Zone channel on DirecTV and the NFL Network, Andrew Siciliano.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody and everybody. It's spring, and with the weather changing and so many great things coming up like Mother's Day and the Wind Down Tour, I definitely need a fresh spring wardrobe for every occasion. This spring, I'm looking for that perfect flowy spring dress for Mother's Day, as well as replacing my everyday basics. That's what I love about JCPenney. They have so many stylish and comfortable options that I always find just what I'm looking for there. Spring is a feel-good season and comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. The fashion at JCPenney is the same way. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with styles that gets you. Something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at prices that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes, and Stafford and Mutual Weave for him, style and comfort for all, even big and tall. Plus even more for the whole family like Levi's and Exertion. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.
All right, joining me now, and I really appreciate this guy coming on because he didn't have to do this after me tweeting about not liking sort of the product, but we'll get into that. And it's Red Zone host, NFL Network host as well, Andrew Siciliano. Andrew, you're a good guy for coming on. Thanks.
Hey, Jimmy, happy to be here. And you know that my tweet was in good fun, right? I realize yours was also...
Right.
Good fun. I follow you. I know you've kind of made this point in the past, so it wasn't, I was not trying to be the angry, offended TV host or anything like that. I was actually laughing when I hit send.
Yeah, and you weren't, and it was, one, so refreshing to see someone who was sane on Twitter, and two, you know, I wanted to respond to you, and then Twitter is so bad now that I thought if I respond, because what I wanted to say back, so just the quick backstory on this, I tweeted that I've had Game Mix for, I had Sunday Ticket for 20 years. I watch Game Mix every Sunday because I'm a degenerate gambler and I want to watch what I want when I want. And this year I don't have it. And I tried to do Red Zone. And after 20, the problem is people on Twitter were saying like, yeah, I agree, Red Zone sucks. And I was like, I'm not saying it sucks. I'm saying it's not for me. There's a big difference there because it's just, after 20 years of Game Mix, it was hard for me to get into that. And Andrew tweeted me back that he wasn't offended and didn't take it personally, which, again, what I wanted to reply to you on that was the last thing you should do is be offended or take it personally, because the success and the popularity of Red Zone is a phenomenon in sports. So my one opinion should not matter to anyone. And clearly you get that. And I think it shows by you coming on that you're a good sport about this. And unlike most people in sports media, you get it.
Well, some days I do, some days I don't. This one, I clearly get it.
Yeah.
Thank you for the kind words. You know, we have a good show if we have good games. If we don't have good games, then the show can lag a little bit, but it's not everyone's cup of tea. I realize that for younger people, we've been doing it 15 years now. It's kind of what they grew up with.
Right.
For older people who are slow to pick up the remote control, regardless, you know, when they're watching something on a Wednesday night, it's probably not their cup of tea. I mean, some people watch it when, let's say their favorite team is playing at 1 o'clock Eastern, and then they don't care at 4 o'clock, so they watch it then, or vice versa.
Right.
It's something for everybody, whatever it is you want to do with it. That's all we care
and,
about.
Yeah, I think if I didn't have game, you know, if I wasn't a game mix watcher for 20 years, I maybe would be able to do Red Zone. But it's also, you know, control issues there. You're in control, not me, and that gets frustrating
sure.
for me.
Well, the game mix thing is interesting because I'm not that I'm sitting on my couch on Sunday, but if I were, I'm not saying I would be totally like you, but I see the value of game mix
yeah.
and you can, you know, control the cursor and change the volume and control it on your own. The,
right.
the issue that I think some people have with game mix where it's 8 games, right? Correct me if I'm wrong.
Well, here's the thing. They three or four or five years ago, I don't know, the, three or four or five years ago, they added a second game mix channel, which is usually
oh,
the
wow,
four
okay.
best, which is four, the four best games of the day. So what I would
wow,
do every Sunday
that.
As a psychopath is I have two TVs in my living room. So it would be the four.
You're normal these days.
Yeah, really. There would be the
that's not,
four
that's
channel.
Not a psychopath.
Right. Four game. It would be the four game game mix channel on one TV, whatever game is shown nationally on my secondary TV, or actually it wasn't that. No, because I had every game. So I would put on a fifth game that was not on the four. And, you know, because it, by this point, I guess maybe this is my issue with Red Zone. By this point of the season, week, what are we, 8 now?
There yeah, are this will be 9.
9. There are usually 2 or 3 1 o'clock games I don't need to watch one play of. And that's what sort of started my tweet last week. Like, I didn't last week need to see one play of Jets-Jaguars. They're both out of it. They both stink. I didn't need to see that game. And so,
but it came down to the end.
Well, yes. And okay,
right,
so the
I
Jaguars
that
win.
At 12:50,
right.
you look up at your options at 12:50 Eastern and go, ugh, no, I get that.
Right,
I totally get
right.
that.
And again, I think it's a more of a problem in the New York market if you don't have the ticket because you're stuck with the Jets and Giants every week at 1 o'clock. And then, you know, there's a better game somewhere else and you can't watch it. And I think that adds to the frustration. Here's the thing about it. There's a lot of layers to this and there's a lot of personal, you know, quirks about it and how you want to watch games. And I mean, I was riveted to the end of the Bengals-Rams game last week because I had bet the Rams. The Bengals scored a touchdown with no time left. They reviewed it. It got taken off the board. Now, if I'm watching Red Zone, and again, you shouldn't be showing that on Red Zone because the game's over at that point.
We did show it.
Okay.
We did. We showed it, and then as soon as he scored, we left.
Right.
And I don't know where else we went, but when we found out it was taken off the board, we did go back. I don't know if we... No, I think we did. We went back and we showed that it had been taken off the board and we showed the play that they ran subsequently.
Now, are you
so we did.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
No, I'm going to say,
no, go ahead.
Are you cognizant of the fact that the Rams are up by 17, the line is 14, the Bengals score a touchdown, or do you not?
I'm not.
Okay.
No, I'm not. I mean, full disclosure, I've never bet a game in my life.
Right.
I don't
care. Right.
I get that people do. And I know there are people now listening going BS. I'm like, it's absolutely true. Never have.
Well, I believe you if you say you've never bet a game.
I speak the language. I get it.
Right.
I like, believe me, there are some weeks where, you know, I'll read, oh my God, Belichick is a 21-point favorite. Or the Patriots, and oh yeah, that number sticks in my head, and I'm a little more cognizant of it. You know, with like with noteworthy things like that, where you just hear it so much during the week that it sticks in your head. You know, full disclosure, one of my spotters, I have like 2 or 3 spotters who are invaluable. I couldn't do the show without them, who are pacing kind of with me. You know, as you would have like a play-by-play spotter. So if I don't remember who 23 on Team X is, I can go, hey, who's 23 on Team X? And they're also there for, you know, your eyes can't physically focus on 10 games at once, and I might be looking at the game over there, and the game over there has something happen. I turn around. I need the details. You know, there is a flag. Well, who's the flag on? Who's challenging? What are they challenging? Who is the DB? Was his, you know, those details. Those guys are there. One of them is like you, let's put it that way, and he has a good read on things, and he did last week go, hey, we need to go back to this Rams game.
Okay.
So he's there for that.
Gotcha.
It's not his only purpose, but he has his finger on the pulse of that far more than I do.
Right, right. All right, so let's talk about you a little bit, and not me and my issues with Red Zone. But again,
no, it's fine.
I think it's, again, I really think after 20 years of game mix, and especially, like I said, the last 4 or 5 years with the four boxes, that was a game changer. That was my heaven right there.
My last thing real quick on game
mix, yeah.
I know I ramble, is that the complaint that I get on Red Zone is when we put four on the screen, that the screens are too small. Mm-hmm. To me, game mix is how I would probably watch, but I would think that those boxes are too small,
right?
Now, because there are too many of them.
Right. When I said psychopath, what I meant by that was I literally take a, I take a bar stool and I put it right about a foot in front of the
that's
TV,
awesome.
And that's where, yeah, so that's how I watch the game mix with the eight and the four.
That's awesome.
The four, I could go in a regular Barca lounger, but if it's the eight, I got to go with the bar stool in front of the TV. I'll give you the one beef I have with Red Zone that I bet you get annoyed with too, because you can't control it. What I noticed, because I have watched it over the last few weeks here and there when I'm home, if I'm not at a sports bar, what it's got to kill you, because I know as a fan it would drive me crazy. You guys will go to a game, okay? Let's go to London now for the Rams Bengals. Rams are driving inside the 20. You go to that game, and then that game, Greg Gumbel's like, oh, let's go to James Brown in studio for the high,
right,
for what happened in Buffalo, and you just showed that Buffalo Philly touchdown.
Yep.
That's got to be fun for you when that happens. I noticed that a few times.
Normally, without getting into too much how the sausage is made, we have people in the control room who are listening to the back haul from each of the trucks. Let's say there's 9 games last week at one, so they're actually listening, and they have a decent idea of whether or not that game with Greg Gumbel is quote unquote sitting on an update.
Right.
So whether or not that at the next break or at the next opportunity, they're going to go back to New York.
Yeah.
We try to avoid them, but it's impossible.
Yeah.
When you have 9 games,
right,
and you're trying to find the action to avoid them all the time.
Since you brought up 9 games, that's one of the questions I wanted to ask you as the host of Red Zone. If you were in charge, Andrew Siciliano's perfect world, what would your mix be every week? How many 1 o'clock games? How many 4 o'clock games?
I would say 7 and 5, 8 and 4. Look, I love 9. 10 is 10. I get. I'm not a fun person to be around with 10 because I'm screaming and yelling and demanding information and saying we're going here and going there and going here. You know, this is something that I know fans get frustrated with. It's, and I try to explain it to people, there are only 7 teams west of the Mississippi. Okay. And so a huge part of this is geography, and that's it. It's a geographical issue that the majority of teams are in the Eastern and Central and even Rocky Mountain time zone.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the way it is. Once you get to this middle part of the season, when you have teams on byes and multiple teams on byes, there are simply fewer options. When you throw in 4 London games, and again, this week we have a 9:30 Eastern kick on NFL Network,
yep,
that eliminates another game, and it just doesn't break down the way it should. And then everyone will always say, well, why don't you just make the East Coast games 4 o'clock? And the short answer is because the teams don't want it.
Right.
They will take the occasional 4 o'clock window, East Coast kick, if, you know, they're guaranteed the CBS or the Fox doubleheader, the majority of the nation gets the game kind of audience. They'll gladly do that, but they don't want 5 games like that. You know, you want 1 or 2 games like that. Jimmy, you're in New York, right?
Yeah.
I mean, now that the seasons are changing, the clocks are changing, no one wants to be sitting in the stadium where it's dark at the start of the second quarter.
Right, right.
For an afternoon game. And there's also, I think, a public resources issue as well, where, you know, you want people tailgating at 10 a.m. for a 4 o'clock kickoff and police and fire and just, you know, you're putting a strain on the local community. Nobody wants to get home at 9 o'clock at night for an afternoon kick. Anyway, you get my point.
Right.
That's why we don't have as many 4 o'clock Eastern time kickoffs. For me, I would love 8-5. I think that's good.
Yeah.
I think 5 keeps all of us on our toes. 3 games can be kind of slow, which is, you know, remarkable that that's where we are in our lives now. But 4 or 5 feels good.
It's funny because a lot of people on Twitter seem to get annoyed when there's only 3-4 o'clock games. I actually love it. I love that I can relax, lock in on 2 games.
Sure.
You know, it's all it really is personal preference on how you want to consume the product on a Sunday.
Well, just think about it. We launched this. This is our 15th year.
Right.
Right. So I think this is show 248 or something this Sunday, something like that. And just think that 15 years ago, if someone had said that we're going to get to a point where watching 3 games simultaneously isn't enough stimulation. Yeah. It's not enough stimulation. I'm angry. I want my money back. Why did I pay for this? There are only 3 games for my brain to bounce back and forth in between. This sucks.
Yep.
But that's where we are.
Well, it is. It is. I mean, if Wikipedia is accurate, you and I are around the same age. And we remember the time before Red Zone, before DirecTV, before Sunday Ticket, when you got 2 games and those were the only 2 games you were watching no matter what. And
you better like it.
People are definitely spoiled these days because of Red Zone and Sunday Ticket.
And not only that, no highlights. So
yeah, you waited till 7
say,
o'clock.
I mean, yeah. I mean, for kids, you know, I mean, we sound like grumpy old men here, but you were stuck watching whatever game was on your local affiliate. And if you wanted to find out how your favorite team was up 14-0 when they went back to the studio for Gumbel, I'm sorry, for Musburger,
right.
you just had to pray that Musburger gave you one little glimpse at that game with one highlight so you could see how they scored one of those 2 touchdowns, and then you were likely in the dark about how they scored the other two.
And here's the other thing. I mean, this is really into the woods and minutia, but, I mean, this is the way it was. If you were watching, let's say, locally in New York, a Giants game on CBS, and they threw it to Musburger, you were only getting highlights from NFC games.
From the CBS.
CBS
right.
wouldn't give you the
NBC games.
Right. So we have come a long way.
Grumpy old men.
You mentioned you've been doing this since 05. Do you ever get tired of it? Are there ever Sundays? Listen, there is a rush on NFL Sundays that can't be duplicated, but is it ever a drag that you know you're locked in for that many hours? You have to be on. There's no, you can't take a dip. You can't take a, you know, sometimes, you know, on the workday, someone might go get a coffee for a couple of, you know, for an hour here. You might make a phone call. When you're on. And that seems very stressful. And you've been doing it a long time. Is it still the same rush for you? Do you ever think, okay, maybe a couple more years and this is it? Where do you stand with all that?
There's a lot to unpack there. Yes, it's still a rush. Yes, I absolutely love it. And this sounds corny and cliched. I legitimately get up on Sunday morning excited to go to work. I get to hold the remote control and yell and scream and do exactly what I would do if I were on the couch. And what I did do when I was on the couch before this whole thing began, and that is watch games with my friends and, you know, scream and yell and throw things every now and then. I get to do it on this forum, and this forum is kind of taken on a life of its own, and I love it. Yes, there are long days, and there are days where you're just dying for someone to stop calling timeouts and run the damn clock out. Let's go home. I've got to use the bathroom, and I'm hungry.
Right.
Of course. Absolutely. It's like every other job. And yes, but whenever I have those moments, you just remind yourself that there's honestly nothing else I would rather be doing. I would love to call games. I get to do that in the preseason. I get to do that here on NFL Network for some college games, the Senior Bowl and stuff like that. I love doing that. But I also love this, and this is, you know, a huge platform and a huge rush. And as badly as I would love to do games, I kind of look at it that I get to do 12 or 13 games every week. I know it's not the same, but it's an amazing rush. And as for the staying focused, the three games at 4 o'clock Eastern, there are times when it is harder to focus. That's because usually you just expend so much energy getting through 8, 9, 10 early.
Yeah.
I mean, it takes a lot out of you, especially that last half hour. I don't ever sit down until like 4:30 Eastern. I pace the entire, I never sit down, because I can't focus. That's how I, you know, I'm just pacing in front of the wall of TVs. That's all I do.
Yeah.
And when it's down to three, I sit down, but the danger is that I'm kind of losing focus. And so I have to remind myself and stand up like every 10 minutes.
So, okay. The games, let's just take it from the games. Let's say from 1 to 7:30, that's 6.5 hours here, if I'm doing some math, mm-hmm. which is always dangerous. Of those 6.5 hours, how many are you standing? Like 6 hours and 15 minutes?
No, I'm okay. Standing from 1, so Eastern time, 1 until like 4:30, 4:45. Like, okay. Once we get into the late games and they kick off and all the early ones are over, and where the three or four late games are on, and maybe one of them's turning into the second quarter at this point, the one that started earlier and the ones that started at 4:25 are kind of finally got their legs underneath them, then I will sit down for a little bit.
Okay.
But not until then.
So I'm sure you've done this in every interview you've done, but just for me and my listeners, take me through your Sunday.
Sure.
Like, you don't have to go like, you know, super, but when you wake up, when you get home, how you stay energized, what's the typical Sunday
schedule? I am a creature of habit. Like, I think like a lot of people in this business, and especially on Sunday, I wake up at the same time, 5:45, kind of hit snooze a few times, turn on Game Day Morning, which is NFL Network's pregame show with Rich and that whole crew. And I watch at 6 a.m. Pacific, their A block, their B block, hop in the shower, out the door, get to Starbucks, like 6:40-ish, order the same thing, five-shot iced venti Americano, get my oatmeal, call my parents. That's a tradition truly unlike any other, as Nance once said. I call them after I get my coffee and talk to my mom and dad, who are in Northern Virginia, where I grew up outside D.C. Usually my dad will tell me he thinks the Browns are going to lose. I tell him, here's how I think they're going to win. My mom just nods and nods and nods and asks, you know, what I did over the weekend and that kind of stuff. Get to work. And then from 7 to 8 Pacific is when I really dig in. I sit down, I put NFL Network's pregame show on, I put ESPN's pregame show on, and then I have a note card that DirecTV put together for each game, like the channel number, a couple of stats on each. And I am very fortunate, Jimmy. My day job at NFL Network, as a host, is the best prep in the world. So by the time I get to Sunday, I've been talking these games and these stories all week.
Right.
And so I, from NFL Network's like 100-page weekly research packet, and from Stats Inc. and all the other resources we have, I kind of have, usually on Friday, put together like 7 or 8 of my favorite notes from every game. And then I will write them in by hand on those cards. Mm-hmm. So I have a card for every game. Do makeup around like 8:30. I sit there from 7 to 8 doing those notes. Too much information. I use the bathroom at 7. Got to get that out of the way.
That's really creature of habit.
Like clockwork. 7:30 makeup. That's when the inactives come out. We do a social media thing around 8. We pre-tape at like 8:05. The we have a pre-recorded VO, which is a little voiceover. If I do have to use the bathroom, they're all generic. Mm-hmm. So, for example, mm-hmm. I would say, hey, we'll get back to this one in a second. But now, back to Foxborough, Patriots, Browns, Nance and Romo.
Right.
And so we have one of those for every game. Generic on the front end, specific on the back end. So that if I run down the hall to go to the bathroom and I'm not back in time and they've got to leave game X to go to game Y, they can use that VO.
If you have to use the facilities, how long does it take you to get there from where you're running from?
I run.
Yeah.
It's about, I don't know, it's about 20 yards down the hall.
Okay.
Not bad.
Okay.
Now, the frustrating thing is when you get there and somebody is using the bathroom, and that's when I lose my bleeping mind.
Yes, I'm sure.
Anyway, do those, rehearse a couple of times, and then we go live at 12:55. I ad-lib. We do that 5-6 minute open. I ad-lib that entire thing. I have a card for each thing. There's no prompter in there. And so we just, we go through it a couple of times, make sure we have a good feel for it, what the notes are we want to get out. And then it's go time. And then, you know, walk over to the wall and they hand me another cup of coffee.
and then are you out of there as soon as the 4 o'clock games end?
Yeah, we usually stay until we're down to one game. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing with Sunday Ticket. I think that sets us apart from the other version of the show, in that anyone who is watching us has that game on a dedicated feed. So if we're down to Browns Patriots or Raiders Texans, that's the last game. We have no show. We can't do a show around one game. We have nowhere else to go. I mean, there's only so many times I can show you highlights from earlier. So we just say, we're going home. You want to watch the end of the game? It's on 7:16.
Yeah. Okay.
And we pack up, then I go usually, you know,
so what,
go use the facilities and then drive home.
How exhausted are you when you get home? Or are you not in bad shape?
I'm exhausted.
Yeah.
I'm exhausted. But yeah. It's not like I'm digging ditches.
No, I
am exhausted.
It's all relative.
But honestly, I'm hungry more than anything because, I mean, we have catering there and they bring me a lunch. But I don't have much time to chew it. And right. B, in the interest of self-preservation when it comes to having to run down the hall of the bathroom, I really don't want to eat much of it.
Right.
I am famished. At that point, it's like 5 o'clock Pacific. I usually go home and get takeout and pour myself a drink, or sometimes maybe I'll meet friends and pour myself a drink, and we'll meet at a restaurant and watch the Sunday night game.
The unwinding is important. You got to do that. This is going to be a really dumb question, but I did not know this until last year, which, for someone who covers media, I guess I shouldn't admit because it's really bad that I didn't know this. But again, I was a game mix watcher for 20 years. I had no idea there were two Red Zone channels until about a year ago. I didn't know there was a direct...
It's still confusing to many people.
Yeah. Why are there two Red Zone channels?
Well, with that, we need a whole other hour-long podcast. But the shortest version of it is this.
Yeah.
In 2005, David Hill, he... Fox Sports
president guru,
founder, and all that fun stuff. David's amazing. David and Eric Shanks, now the president of Fox Sports, came up with this idea. Shanks had been over in Italy, actually doing Sky Italia stuff, and this is something that they had done with Serie A soccer, something similar, and came back and had the idea. And David sold it to the league, and we're going to launch it in 2005, and we did, and it was a DirecTV only kind of thing. Well, fast forward a couple of years, DirecTV's deal was up with the league, and they were negotiating an extension for Sunday Ticket. And at that point, NFL Network was not getting as many cable deals as everyone had hoped. And the people on the league side realized, and they were right with this, that the Red Zone channel, what we had created at DirecTV, was something that could be used to get on cable companies.
Right.
Good idea. It worked. This could be a substitute for Sunday Ticket for these cable companies.
Right.
And so as part of the extension that DirecTV got that year, the agreement was that NFL Network would produce one, a cable version, if you will.
Right.
So that everyone else could get one. So that's kind of what they did. They started, I think, 5 or 6 years after us. The confusion became is that the name was the same. You know,
right.
I had always said around DirecTV, if there's going to be a second one, call it Touchdown TV or something like that.
Right.
But no, they kept the name, understandably. The name had equity with it.
Right.
But there is confusion. And to make it even more confusing, A couple of years after that, I came to work at NFL Network during the week.
Right.
We're all kind of one big happy family. There's plenty of crossover. But yes, if you get cable, you get Scott Hansen, who does a great job. And if you get DirecTV, if you get Sunday Ticket, if you're in a bar, because bars pretty much have to have Sunday Ticket, then you're going to see me.
Yeah. So it's really about the cable companies didn't want to carry the DirecTV version, I would assume, to really boil it down.
Look, I don't know the brass tacks at the negotiating table back how many years ago it was, 10 years ago. But, I mean, understandably, we have a DirecTV-branded product.
Right. That's what it is,
It's to throw that on... To throw that on the cable companies probably wasn't ideal.
That's what it is.
And I'm sure, and this is, again, long before I worked here, I'm sure that the people on the league side, the network side here, also wanted the chance to monetize their own thing, which is understandable.
Right. It's interesting. As we're discussing this, it just popped into my head that I had John Oran from Sports Business Journal on this podcast, I don't know, maybe a couple of months ago, and we were talking about the future of DirecTV and the NFL and the Sunday Ticket. And one of the things he told me, which I was surprised when I heard it, but I shouldn't have been surprised because it makes total sense, because I no longer have DirecTV, which is why I'm in this whole mess. And obviously my wish, just as a consumer and a football fan, is that the Sunday Ticket goes to cable companies. Like, I have Verizon Fios now. If the Sunday Ticket's $1,000, I'd pay it and I'd be, you know, happy as can be. But what Oran told me on that podcast was that the cable companies now don't even want Sunday Ticket because it would cost so much money, and Red Zone is so successful for these cable companies and makes cable companies so much money that, and everyone in America watches the Red Zone channel, that Red Zone has basically taken away the desire of cable companies to have Sunday Ticket, which you, as someone who's a host of Red Zone, I mean, that's got to make you feel good in a way.
There are a lot of layers here. I would put it this way. I would look at it from the consumer side, and that this is kind of the way. And look, Shanks and David Hill and James Crittenden, our initial producer, who's now one of our VPs at DirecTV and still backbenches on occasion, Bill Wagner, our producer now, they struck gold, and we found a way to super serve the fan. And the fact that there's ESPN goal line, and that, you know, NBC Sportsnet does something for EPL, and that there's MLB Strike Zone and all these, that it's kind of the way that the consumer now wants it. So however the providers need to get it to the fans and the deals they strike with the league, that's above my pay grade, but it's what the fans now want. And it's what younger generations have grown up with.
Right.
Partly because I think the younger generation is more concerned with fantasy than they are of team success. I think that's a huge factor. We came along at the time when fantasy was blowing up, and we owe plenty of our success to that. We came along at the time when everyone was getting a smartphone, when their attention spans plummeted, right?
Yep.
And whether we caused that or we just got lucky with that, I think it's all kind of one and of the same. And that's now what fans want. I mean, you sit in your car, you have a satellite radio. It's not like you're jumping back and forth between the classic rock station, the hip hop station, the pop station, and the NPR station. And then there's that one news station. You have five options, what it was when we were younger. Now you got 300 options. And by the way, you know within two notes whether or not you like the song, and you go to the next one. And you probably don't even need to do that because you're scrolling on the screen and you go, I don't like that channel, so that song, and you're just going to find something else.
Yeah.
And people don't have any patience for something that is boring anymore.
Right.
And that's why they want it like this.
Well, the interesting thing, though, about what you said about, you know, what the consumers want, I think the one issue we have today is every consumer wants something different. So it's like, how do you, because I'm old, I want Sunday Ticket on my television, whereas all my coworkers who here at SI, who are basically in their mid-20s, they think I'm a dinosaur because I have a television. They're just, you know, stream. I don't want to stream the NFL. I want it on my TV. So it's tough to even satisfy all the consumers from that standpoint because of the way everything is these days with technology?
Well, actually, the overlap there is the sweet spot, and that is people want it streamed on their TV.
Yeah.
Right? In other words, you know, the cord cutters, right, they still want to be able to get it on their big screen TV or on their phone or on their tablet. I mean, I get tweets, I get texts every weekend from strangers or friends who are at their kids' soccer game on Sunday or at their kids' whatever game.
Right.
Or at a church event or, you know, because they're watching on their phone. They want to be able to take it with them. You know, the Peyton Eli football on your phone commercial, what was it, 7 or 8 years ago at the time? I mean, it was catchy and we loved it and they're great actors. But that was really, you know, I think we did that commercial maybe 2 or 3 years after we offered streaming at DirecTV, and I could be wrong with that, to Sunday Ticket subscribers. Standalone streaming is something different, but, you know, subscribers can take it with them. And then I think that was kind of like when our generation realized, oh, hey, we can do that too. Whereas the younger generation was probably, you know, 100 years ahead of us.
Right, right. Before we wrap up, couple of quick things here. And again, so nice of you to come on after, you know, me saying I'm not a Red Zone fan. And the thing is, I feel
bad at wrestling.
I feel worse now. Yeah, I feel worse now because I feel like I could do this podcast with you for 3 hours. There's so much to talk about with this, and it's right up my alley.
I'll do it again.
Two things before we go. I mean, you said, you know, you mentioned Scott Hansen. Are you competitive with him in any way, shape, or form?
I mean, look, Scott's, is he here? Let me look across the newsroom. He's not here yet, but we work in the same newsroom every day. We've known each other. He's maybe 3 years older than me, but we've known each other since Syracuse. Right. I think I was a freshman. He was a senior, something like that. So, no, like on a day-to-day basis, we're not. Do I you know, want to put the best damn show out there every day? Absolutely. Bleeping-lutely. Do I think we have a better show? Of course, but I've never seen theirs because I can't see it. I get DirecTV at home.
Right.
So, you know, it's not like I'm going to come in and go to the tape room here, if we even have a tape room, and say, can I get a cut-up of what they did on Sunday? I want to go home and compete.
Right.
No, but yeah. I think all of us, certainly at DirecTV, and I have no doubt that all of Scott and his crew here, yes, there's a little competition, certainly, but it's not as if anyone is flipping back and forth. Like with the pregame shows, CBS, Fox, right, Game Day Morning, you can flip back and forth. With us, you had to have made your decision in the off season.
Right.
Right? Like, what's your provider? And a lot of times, it's not your individual decision. It's a household decision.
Yeah.
What does your significant other need to do? What about your internet? What do your kids want? Are you moving? Does that factor? And so, yes, we are absolutely competitive as to whether or not anyone can truly look at the scoreboard on a week-to-week basis. No, you can't.
Right. And then also, I know you do the Rams preseason games. Is doing play-by-play an ultimate goal for you? Is that a dream job or, you know, what you're doing now with Red Zone, and you do obviously NFL Total Access and a lot of stuff on the network. Is that the end game, or is play-by-play something that you want to do more of?
I would love a perfect mix. I know you mentioned Wikipedia. I believe somebody wrote on my Wikipedia page that that is my dream job. I would love to do as many things as humanly possible at once. So, like I said before, yeah, I would love to call games. I love calling 12 games at once. I've been fortunate. I've done the Rams now, let me think, 9 years in the preseason. Wow. I did them in St. Louis for how many ever there. And I'm very grateful to NFL Network for giving me the Senior Bowl and the East-West Shrine Game,
right,
the Black College Football Hall of Fame game. I did like 4 or 5 AAF games. So I'm very grateful for those opportunities. I would love to do as much play-by-play as I can. I really haven't tried to get Saturday stuff for college football because it's just I got to be up and out by 6 a.m. on Sunday morning here.
Right.
It's hard. I marvel at guys like Dave Pasch, for example,
mm-hmm,
who does that every week, who does ESPN games on Saturday in the middle of nowhere and then somehow wherever the Cardinals are Sunday morning.
Right.
I marvel at someone like that. One day, maybe I would do a mix like that, but I love what I'm doing now.
Yeah. All right, well, I really do appreciate you coming on. Like I said, I got to get you on again because we didn't even get into your dislike of wrestling. And I know
I have nothing against wrestling. It's just not my cup of tea.
Exactly.
I mean, I loved it when I was 8. I'm not 8 anymore.
Right.
That's just the way I look at it. I just can't stand when people go so overboard. I'm like, if I'm going to watch a scripted drama, I'm going to watch Succession. That's my favorite primetime scripted drama.
And
when you say that to people, they get so bleeping offended.
I don't get offended.
I'm like, how are you offended by that? It's a scripted drama. People lose their mind.
The biggest takeaway from this podcast that everyone listening needs to understand is that people need to be more like Andrew and myself. If someone doesn't like something that you like, it's okay. You can move on with your life. You don't have to be offended or upset.
Exactly.
Yeah, and again, my issue too. Listen, what I want to make extra clear to not to you because I know you get it to the people listening. I'm not saying Red Zone is a bad product. I'm not saying you can't dispute it. Listen, it's undeniable.
Not a little cup of tea.
But for me, it wasn't for me. And there's nothing wrong with that. And the fact that you would come on after me saying that, I think shows what a good guy you are.
I'll leave you with a 15-second quick story about how it's not everyone's cup of tea, and I highly doubt Emmett Smith will remember this. But many, many years ago, Emmett Smith was sitting on the set with us on Total Access here at the network. We go to a commercial, and he looks to me, and he goes, "My wife hates you."
Oh, my God.
I went, "Excuse me?" I was like, "What?" And he goes, "Yeah. She'll walk in. I'm watching this." And she's just like, "Stop it. I can't watch this.
Oh, my God.
I can't focus on this because..." And I've heard this before, because we move so quickly that you just can't focus sometimes.
Right.
And for plenty of people, that's not their cup of tea.
Yeah, but there's no need to hate you personally.
I wasn't offended. I laughed my you-know-what off.
Yeah, yeah. Well, again, don't hate on Andrew personally. I mean, that's the bottom line. The product is not for you. That's what you need to say, not I hate you. Fine line there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It was all in good fun, by the way. It wasn't anything like actual physical distance.
Yes. All right. Well, that's good to hear. Thanks again for coming on. I appreciate it. And keep that energy up every Sunday.
Hey, Jimmy, anytime. Let's do it again.
Okay. Thanks to Andrew. Appreciate it.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody and everybody. It's spring, and with the weather changing and so many great things coming up like Mother's Day and the Wind Down Tour, I definitely need a fresh spring wardrobe for every occasion. This spring, I'm looking for that perfect flowy spring dress for Mother's Day, as well as replacing my everyday basics. That's what I love about JCPenney. They have so many stylish and comfortable options that I always find just what I'm looking for there. Spring is a feel-good season and comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. The fashion at JCPenney is the same way. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with styles that gets you. Something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at prices that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes, and Stafford and Mutual Weave for him, style and comfort for all, even big and tall. Plus even more for the whole family like Levi's and Exertion. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.
All right. My thanks to Andrew, who was bashing wrestling. Perfect transition now into Renee Young from WWE and FS1, who's here to talk about her new wrestling show and a lot of WWE matters. Here's Renee. All right, joining me now is always one of these weird things where, because I feel like I know this person because of Twitter, but we've never met. This is her first time on the SI Media podcast. She is from the WWE and now Fox Sports. Renee Young. Renee, how are you?
Hi, I'm great. How are you?
I'm well. It's so weird for me because we've exchanged many, many tweets, and now we're actually chatting like people.
It is weird when that happens. It's odd, and then you like meet someone in real life. You're like, wow, we've exchanged many conversations back and forth through the internet, and then real life. Here we are.
So strange.
Well, through
so
the
strange.
Phone.
I will say, yeah, exactly. I know we're progressing. We'll meet in person one day.
We are. We're doing baby steps.
Yes. Before we even get to WWE backstage on FS1 debuting November 5th at 11 p.m., one of the Twitter things we had is you got on me pretty good and rightfully so because I did a list of Queen's best songs and I omitted "Don't Stop Me Now" and you called me out and
yeah.
I felt the wrath of all your followers and it was not one of my better Twitter days. That's for sure.
Well, listen, that's on you. You had
I agree.
And I had to step up for Queen fans everywhere. To not have "Don't Stop Me Now" on a top five list is absurd.
Well, it was.
Have it on there.
It's way worse than that because I think it was top 10. And here's the thing: this is one of the problems, one of the many problems with Twitter. Sometimes with Twitter, you just screw up, and I just screwed up that day.
Yeah, that's true.
Like you were right.
Yeah.
But I couldn't stop the avalanche that was coming my way, and I just wanted to like throw in the towel or the white flag, whatever the expression is, and be like, yeah, I'm like, I got it. I screwed up. I was wrong. It should have been on the list. But like, once that horse is out of the barn, that's it. The party's over.
You can't turn it back. It's gone. Yeah. I mean, it could have been worse. I mean, that was just at least like, you know, a conversation somewhat in jest, but you know, regular conversation. But it's different when like you like legit put somebody on blast and then, like,
right,
you know, your followers sick them and
that's
a whole other situation.
And the funny thing is when I see someone who I like and respect put out a list on Twitter and I have a problem with it, I'm like the first one to pounce. So I can't say anything. Yeah.
Hey, I look you're Freddie Mercury and not perk my ears up.
I agree. I thoroughly enjoy your Instagram when you tweet. You're a huge music fan and I enjoy your Instagram posts with your vinyl collection.
Thanks.
And you play your albums. It's a very cool deal. What is there anything new or like, or even old? Like, what are you listening to right now that you're into?
What am I listening to right now? So, a guy that I'm obsessed with in the past, you know, maybe 2 months is Orville Peck. I cannot get enough of this dude. He's like Roy Orbison meets like Morrissey in like a real get up, like a giddy up get up with a mask on. But his voice is just outstanding. I think his whole story is that he was actually like a drummer in a punk band and then started this Orville Peck side piece. And his voice is just incredible. His songs are really cool. His album's called Pony. It's really good. So I've been playing a ton of that. What have I been listening to old? I just watched Echo in the Canyon, that new movie. It's out on Netflix right now. So I was listening to some old stuff like that, like listening to some old, like Sgt. Pepper's, even getting into like Abbey Road, getting into some more Beach Boys stuff. But that's, I literally just watched that 2 nights ago. So yeah, that's what I've got spinning up on my iTunes when I'm traveling.
Gotcha. All right. Well, since we're talking about music, I'll do one more music thing, and then we'll get all to the wrestling thing and WWE backstage and all that. But I got to. So I was doing a little. Well, I was doing some research for this interview, and I saw that you had an appearance in Kelly Clarkson's video for "Behind These Hazel Eyes," and personally, I could do this whole podcast just on that. Because I'm a huge Kelly Clarkson fan, but how did that happen, and how cool was that for you?
So that was you know, prior to getting into this whole wrestling sports casting world, I was just a young girl that was an actress that was auditioning for things. So that was actually the very first thing that I booked that was like a legit thing with like. It was his name's Joseph Kahn, the music director. He was like a, you know, pretty big music director. But I thought that it was just the coolest thing. Much Music, which is you know, our big music station in Canada, they came down to interview everybody, and they interviewed me for it. But yeah, I mean, I was just like randomly auditioning. I was literally an extra in it. I played her bridesmaid, but this was a huge moment for me. But
absolutely.
Yeah, it was so cool.
I think one of the misconceptions about Sports Illustrated here in the office is that like we just talk about sports all day,
And that couldn't be further from the truth. And just to give you an example, a huge fight this office broke out like a month ago because there was this huge debate about who's the more successful, popular American Idol person, Kelly Clarkson or Carrie Underwood. And it was like more heated than like LeBron James versus Michael Jordan. So
that is a heated conversation. Who did you say?
I ride or die with Kelly.
Ride or die with Kelly too. Like, I mean, obviously Carrie Underwood is so like, she's visible. I could pick her out of a crowd. I know exactly who she is, but I don't know as many of her songs. I can belt out a thousand Kelly Clarkson songs.
Same. Yeah. Plus, like, I know she had that. Yeah. I know she has the song with, I don't know, The Wheel and Jesus or whatever, but like, Since You've Been Gone is an all-time iconic.
All-time.
Yeah.
All-time.
So. It's always Kelly.
Gone. I mean, I will say Behind the Saves Alive, what a great tune. She's got some sleepers out there, too. That My December album, there's some good stuff on there.
I'm with you on that.
Not that I love singing in my car by myself.
Who doesn't? The worst is when you get busted doing it, which is, you know.
Oh, my God. My nightmare. Yeah. I actually try to sync up my car so that I'm not lying in line with the window so that I can continue singing.
I got busted once doing Meatloaf's Paradise by the Dashboard Lights, which is like you have to perform that song. You don't just sing it. It was not a good situation for me. So, all right, we've done so. I could do this for like 2 hours, but we'll talk about wrestling.
Yeah, me too.
Before we get through, one of the things. So I'm a WWE fan, and I remember when I first started seeing you on WWE TV, and I was like, she's really good. And I didn't know for a little while you were doing WWE that you had started, or I don't know if started, but you had a pass with The Score in Canada. And I know you know all the starters guy, Jay Skeets and Taz, who I've had on this podcast.
I love those
and like,
dudes.
So tell me how you went the transition from the sports to WWE, or was it just you always wanted to do TV and you didn't care what it was?
Honestly, it really was about doing TV when I started. I'm really just going to make it a 3-hour podcast. When I was auditioning, doing music videos, doing random commercials here and there, I really wanted to find a way to get a good national TV gig, which is not an easy thing to come across in Canada. So when I saw The Score and saw the way that they were conducting their interviews. And my main thing, too, like, right out of high school, I went to Second City. Like, I had these hoop dreams of doing more comedy-related stuff. Mm-hmm. So when I saw the way The Score conducted their interviews, which were far more, like, comedic interviews. I mean, we had Jerry D, who is, like, just a legit comedian. He was doing interviews there in the way that, you know, it wasn't broadcasting. So I was like, oh, okay, maybe I can do that. Maybe I can try to, like, pitch a show there or find something to do. So anyways, once I finally got my foot in the door there, and I had kind of dabbled around in a few different things. I played a ton of sports growing up. So me working in sports was never all that far-fetched. It was a bit of an easy fit. But when I'd been working there, I'd only been there for, I want to say, 6 months when my boss, Greg Sansoni at the time, he asked me if I wanted to do a post show, a live show after Raw. We started doing this show, which was called Right After Wrestling at the time, and then it got changed to Aftermath. But that was me sort of dipping my toe back in the wrestling world. I mean, I watched it a bit when I was a kid, and then once I started doing that show, and then just got resubmerged. So, you know, and even at that time, so I was doing the Aftermath show, but I was also doing like a daily sports show with some of the Basketball Jones guys, what they were at the time, then the Starters, and I think they're called No Dunks now. But, we did daily shows where I was with this guy, Cam Stewart, and we would do a rundown of all the major sports headlines, throw stuff over the Basketball Jones dudes. They would give us our basketball update. So, we kind of dabbled in a little bit of everything. And then I also did, like, a sports comedy show, like The Soup, called The Break. So I was kind of doing a little bit of everything. But anyways, once my contract there was up and I was looking to make the move down to the U.S., just joining WWE was a natural fit. It made the most sense. I went in and auditioned, and here I am.
Here you are. It's so when you was tell me about getting into the WWE in terms of did you have to try out a lot? Because of your work at The Score, they wanted to bring you right in? Was it difficult to get that gig?
They were familiar with me when I headed down because, when I was working at The Score, we were working closely with WWE. Like, I remember flying down to Stanford and having like a meeting there about, you know, words we could say, how we talked about the product. Because before it was just like willy-nilly. We could say whatever we wanted and have opinions about things.
Right.
And whatever. Or once WWE was like, hey, like, why don't we, you know, maybe work together on this a little bit more and finish it up. So we went down to Stamford and had a big meeting there. And I did, at that point, I never thought in a million years that I would even join WWE. But then, when the audition came up for me to go down there, it was between there and ESPN. And I ended up at WWE. But the audition process was interesting. I went down and it was like a lot of like improv stuff. So there's some kind of clip online somewhere that you can find of them handing me some kind of a battery pack. And they're like, sell this to me. And this is a huge animal or trimmer or something ridiculous. But I had to do that. They put me, I did do commentary for a little bit, which was even more of a disaster than me calling Monday Night Raw, believe it or not. and then they have me doing more of like an after show kind of thing, which is for sure more my wheelhouse. So that was fun. They made me wear a bunch of different hats the day that I was in there. It was really like an audition boot camp just to see what I could bring to the table. And then when I did sign the contract there, I had no idea what I was going to be doing. I assumed when I signed there that I would be doing something like the show I was doing for The Score, which evidently is now what I'm doing for FS1 with that stage. But there's been a lot of different hats I've worn back on that journey to get to this platform again. I mean, from doing backstage interviews, hosting network shows, I never really did too many live event things, but to, you know, doing commentary for a year, doing kickoff shows. I've done so many different things within WWE, but I feel like I've just recently landed back in my sweet spot, which is very nice.
Yeah. You know, and I have to say it's as someone who observes media sort of for a living and as a wrestling fan, I was fascinated by your honesty and the way you handled sort of the criticisms about you on Monday Night Raw. You just called it a disaster.
Right.
And I know you're thrilled. I know you're thrilled to be doing WWE backstage for FS1, but I'm curious about your approach in the way you handled, forget the actual job, because I mean, if you're a wrestling fan, you know that you've heard sort of the horror stories about that job with Vince screaming in your ear. And if you want to get into that, right, I would love to know that. But even take that out of it. Did you just never feel comfortable doing that job?
I never felt comfortable doing that job. It was a very stressful year, to be completely honest. It's like, you look at that situation of, you know, I'm here in WWE, you know, kind of like the first female to come in that role. Obviously, that role's grown exponentially since, with so many other women that we have backstage doing shows and hosting shows, et cetera, et cetera. But at the time, I had kind of done everything. So I was like, what can I do? I need to do something else. I can't just stand here and do these backstage interviews anymore. Like, I need something else to chew on. Mm-hmm. So you have Michael Cole and Triple H pull me aside 1 week more, like, hey, you're going to do commentary on Monday Night Raw next week. And I was like, what? Why? Who approved this? Whose idea was this? But it's like anything. You're like, all right, damn, this opportunity is in front of me. I'm going to try and figure it out. I consider myself fairly talented at being able to talk. I know the ins and outs of the wrestling business. This should work. I'm sure I can make something work of this. To go out there and call 3 hours of wrestling, and coming from the background that I come from, of more like, I'm a host and I like being able to have more of a bubbly personality. And I think that is what fans have been a little bit more drawn to, or they're drawn to my sarcastic side, that I can be a smart ass. It's really hard to do that on commentary. Especially when, you know, you've got Graves, who's great at that. But also stepping in there as a third person. I'm used to being that A person. I didn't get to drive the ship. So to have Cole and Graves be in their rhythm, and then I'm trying to jump in there, and kind of everything's already been said. It was odd. You know, I tried to come at it from a fan standpoint, but then that doesn't always work, because that doesn't always seem to be what necessarily they want you to be saying or doing. Right. So I just always felt a little bit of misdirection about what my purpose was out there. And then, but on top of that, trying to call my husband's matches when he was still with WWE. So there was a lot of different weird factors, and not to be making excuses about it. It just wasn't the right gig for me. It wasn't for me. And it's, you know, people that excel at that, it is a tough job, man, to be out there and talking in sound bites. And you've got to talk at specific points in a match, whether you're talking through somebody's comeback or, you know, someone's heat, blah, blah, blah. That for me to try to get in a bit of information just during somebody's entrance where it felt like a normal spot for me to talk, and we've got promo segments and blah, blah, blah. But anyways, yeah, it was a doozy. It was a doozy.
Did you feel like you, I get you mentioned you wanted to do something different, so the fact that they come to you with this opportunity seems like a good idea at the time, but did you also feel any sort of... I don't use the word obligation because I think it's a little hard of a word, but like you were the first woman who ever did commentary on Monday Night Raw. Was that a factor in all this for you to say yes or want to do that gig?
Yeah, it was definitely a cool feather to put in my cap, but you know, having done it, I mean, I'm not one to back away from something, and I really truly wanted it to be a thing to work. I wanted to excel at that. Not being good at something is a tough pill to swallow for me. You know, I wanted to be able to make that spot work. And, you know, it just wasn't. It just wasn't really working, and I don't think it was what everybody wanted in that spot.
Some people in this business are good at handling criticism. Some people are not. You seem like you are just based on the way you handled it, but I think even the people who are good at handling criticism have those moments where you're just like, oh my God,
Well, I mean, once that crack of insecurity starts to happen, it's like, it's one thing to like shrug it off and be like, ah, it's fine, it's fine, it's fine. You're like crying through your laughter.
Right.
That like, you know, you can only take so much of that. And, you know, it really went in like ebbs and flows where like, you know, the first time I stepped out there to do commentary, I actually felt like my very first show, I was so confident going out there that I was like, yeah, whatever, what do I have to lose? I mean, I'm going to do it once. I didn't know it was going to be a permanent gig for the year. So I went out and just did it and felt pretty good about it. And I think at that point when everyone's like, oh my God, finally, we've got a woman out here doing it. Everyone's rooting for you and it's great. But then, you know, a couple weeks go by and the fans all of a sudden want to be like, we don't like this. We don't like the sound of something new. We don't like the sound of a woman's voice. We don't, you know, we different opinions here and there. But yeah, I mean, it's hard to keep some of those insecurities in check sometimes when everyone just wants to be good, you know, at any whatever anyone's doing. They just want to be good at it. And when there's sort of that misstep or you're not so sure footed about what you're doing, it can be a slippery slope for sure.
So now you're off Monday Night Raw commentary and you're hosting WWE Backstage, which will debut on FS1 November 5th at 11 p.m. Eastern time. How did this gig come about? Was it sort of like everyone knew you had you wanted to get off Raw and then this came about, or was it you were going to do this, whether they wanted to keep you on Raw? How did you end up as the host of WWE Backstage on FS1?
A lot of things sort of falling into place together. I think as soon as the partnership with WWE and Fox came to fruition, knowing and hearing these rumblings about this new show coming about, I just think it was sort of a no-brainer that I was going to step in there to do that. I think I made the most sense to go in there to host it. I think it's kind of just as simple as that. And, you know, with doing commentary, I was just always sort of waiting and to be like, okay, do we do this? Am I ready to go now? Can I be? Let me go, please, for the love of God. I mean, once that time started to tick down, we always knew too that once the changes were going to happen with Raw being strict to Raw, the SmackDown roster being strict to SmackDown, knowing that these big changes were going to happen, that seemed like obviously the transition of all the announcers are going to change. Everyone's going to be brand specific, and it was the perfect time of everything to kind of happen all at once.
So give the listeners here a little taste of what WWE Backstage will be. I know there have been two episodes that have aired, even though you haven't officially, I guess, launched. What do you want the show to be? What do you expect the show to be? What can viewers expect from WWE Backstage?
I think our biggest thing is being true to the voice of WWE fans. You know, being able to pull the curtain back a little bit and talk about the things that people are talking about online, the things that, that fans have issues with, the things that, that the fans love. We're going to be talking about all of those things. And we've been having different versions of different panels of who else is going to be on there. I couldn't be more happy to have Booker T as my co-host on Backstage. I've got such a great rapport with him. I mean, he's such an icon, two-time Hall of Famer. He's the best. He's such a cool dude to be able to rely on just to get his perspective. I mean, we can hear Booker T's opinion on things all over the place. So to be able to put that on this platform as well. And then, yeah, bring in different people just to hear other people's perspectives. We've tried so many different things as we get set for our final launch. And I think each show will have a bit of a different look and a different feel depending on who else is going to be on the panel, what segments we have. We've got, you know, we've got celebrities coming through, and we've seen our promo school segment on the preview show that you're talking about, which is a ton of fun. I mean, to have these people come in is such good sports, and then have Booker T or Christian rip you a new one on live TV. But it's really fun. It's fun. Yeah. It's loose. I think it's the voice that wrestling fans want to hear from all of us that are on TV, that you've been waiting to hear us be able to talk about wrestling from a little bit more of a critical eye.
So I talked to one of the Fox bigwigs, who is one of the great guys in the sports media business and is a huge wrestling fan, Jacob Ullman, who I know you know well.
What a dude.
From Fox. Yeah. And we got into this discussion because he had accused me of saying that I guess I may have said on one of these podcasts that I didn't think that WWE Backstage would be good if they didn't talk about quote unquote real stuff, which I don't think I think what I said was, you know, I need to know, like, is the show going to be playing to the script or is the show going to not play to the script? And I guess.
Right.
The answer is the latter on that, right? Like, will
it's definitely the latter. I mean, okay. So I mean, like for us, the last thing we want is to have it feel like a shill show. You know, we're not on there just promoting different stuff coming up. I mean, of course, when there's, you know, different matches coming up and whatnot, we'll be talking about that stuff. But for us to be able to come on, I mean, this is just the first thing off the top of my head, but for us to talk about the end of Hell in a Cell, the way that finish was, for us to be able to have those conversations about why that didn't work, what's the next move for The Fiend, how do we make The Fiend work, is Seth Rollins cool, is he not cool, is he, you know, whatever it was that JR said about his girlfriend or whatever,
okay,
you know, we're
going to
have those conversations.
Literally, I was just about to ask that question. That was the one. I was going to say, like, would you address Jim Ross, you know, making very snarky comments about Seth Rollins and saying he only wishes he could be over as his girlfriend? So if the answer to that question is yes, then I think this show will be a rousing hit with wrestling fans because, you know, it's such a weird time, I think, for wrestling when that the backstage stuff is almost what people want more than the on-the-show stuff. It's so... You know, I wrote, go ahead.
Funny. I think people like hearing their own opinions echoed through us. It's like people at home being like, yes, that's what I've been saying. That's what I'm thinking. So for us to be able to take that platform and be a voice for them and have those conversations and, you know, based off who's on our panel, I mean, we have a lot of inside information amongst the group of us. So
yeah.
I think those information or those conversations will be interesting.
All right. Well, you've sold me on the show. So Jacob Ullman can
tune
be
in.
Happy
it's
now.
It's going to be good, yeah. I promise.
I will definitely tune in. Hi, Jacob. I know you're listening, and I will tune in. Because, again,
hi, Jacob.
I actually wrote a column about this sometime over the last couple of weeks on SI.com, and I feel for sort of the WWE, the creative team, because I think it's so hard to get something now that people can really get into because of, you know, the internet, social media, everything's it's impossible to keep something a secret. It's impossible to keep something fresh. Everyone wants to know the backstage part of what goes on TV. And I think that's,
yeah,
I have sympathy. I think it's really hard to come up with,
it is hard.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's part of the, you know, one of the things, I mean, I don't know how that even really comes up, but I mean, when you're working for WWE, I mean, you're always hearing these rumblings in the hallway of, oh, something's going to happen. Something cool is going to happen. But that's like, it's so rare that those moments actually happen when you don't know who's going to come out or what the big surprise is going to be. And when it works, I mean, that's what makes wrestling so damn cool is when those moments really work. They're special when they do.
And I also think if you look at the things that really, really went huge over the last few years, Becky Lynch, Daniel Bryan, the Yes Movement. Mm-hmm. It was stuff that really wasn't planned out. I mean, so and
yeah,
you know,
organic.
Yeah, so I feel for like the creative team. I mean, and I know it all goes through Vince, and you know they, you know, Bruce Pritchard now is in charge of SmackDown, and Paul Heyman's in charge of Raw, and they're doing things. But I think it's a really hard time for, you know, creative to really do something.
Yeah,
that's
and
just,
you know, it's hard. Yeah, I mean, I feel for the creative team as well. I mean, it's a tough gig, especially when you feel like your show is being dictated somewhat by what people are saying online. How much
right.
of that do you take into consideration versus just trying to be like a professional television writer, you know?
Right.
Like, do you
right.
think like other shows have to go online and like rewrite their creative based on what people are saying or not saying, or like going against what feels like the popular things? It might not be like where the plan was headed for certain things. Like, it is a tough gig, man.
Yeah.
I do not envy that spot.
And so WWE Backstage debuts November 5th, 11 p.m. FS1. And the good thing about FS1, I would assume they're going to replay it at all different other times, too, so people can catch it.
It's going to be on all the time. It's always going to be on.
Yeah.
I'm not sure when the replays are of it, but yeah, Tuesdays, 11 p.m. Eastern time, we will be up, we will be live, and we will be making things happen.
I'm so excited.
It's really fun. I've been so happy with everything. I said, just getting the show together. I feel like I've got like a... Like Stella got her groove back.
You could. It's really like you're let out of the cage now, and you're in your element, and that's an awesome, awesome thing. And I think everyone will see that on this show. What is? I had Triple H on my podcast. I don't know, maybe a month ago, and we got into this show a little bit because I had asked him about CM Punk. There were rumors. Well, I guess there weren't rumors. I mean, I guess it was a fact that he had tried out. And I asked Triple H, you know, how that works out, because obviously there have been issues with CM Punk and WWE, and he said, you know, never say never, which is always a wrestling thing. But I'm just curious with the show, is this show more of an FS1 show? Is it more of a WWE show? Is it 50-50? Who are your bosses on it? Who's running the show here?
I think that's sort of a little bit more of a Jacob question, to be honest. But I mean, this is an FS1 show. We
right.
are, you know, otherwise it's like I would say just doing a kickoff panel for WWE. You know, I think that's exactly the thing that we're trying not to do. I think we want to step away from feeling like we're just promoting. It's like, no, we're having time to have conversations, and we are, putting on that critical lens. So this is an FS1 show. Obviously, we work with WWE. I still am a WWE employee, but it's, you know, it's falling between the cracks on both of those.
Yeah, I think the fact that that just even FS1 could audition CM Punk shows you it's you know, FS1
exactly.
has a big say.
Exactly. I mean, that speaks volumes as to what they want their product to look like.
Would you like to work with him? Did you guys get along when he was in the company?
Yeah, I would love to work with Punk. He's one of the most polarizing, most popular figures in all of WWE history, and I think for him to step back into that world, I mean, it just makes wrestling fans go bonkers over that. So I think that it would be really cool. I would love to have that opportunity.
And I'm sure FS1 would too as well, in terms of, you know, ratings and getting buzz.
Yeah, of course.
Few would do it more than him. I have to ask, you know, I don't want to like go crazy and dip into your personal life, but you are married.
Here it comes.
I just have to know what it's like when your husband works for the competition. What is that? How weird is it? Is it not weird?
It's not weird. It's not weird at all. I mean, listen, as soon as we're both home and, you know, we have like a glass of wine, he pours his Jack and Diet Coke, and we just start talking about wrestling films. I'm talking about what my day is like. He's talking about what his day is like. And it's, again, like we said, you know, earlier, it's such an interesting time for all of wrestling. So I'm sure a lot of people would love to be flies on the wall of our room.
I was going to say, I would think you'd almost...
conversations that happen, that's for sure.
I would think you'd almost not want to talk about wrestling because, you know, you're in it all day. But I guess if you work for different companies, there's good traits.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you're married to John Moxley. That man likes to talk about wrestling. So, yeah, it happens. We definitely do talk about it. But, sometimes I need to cleanse my palate. I'm like, can we just put on This Is Us and not talk about wrestling for a minute? That would be great.
are you telling me in this audience that John Moxley watches This Is Us?
He's a big This Is Us fan, yes.
there's the nugget we need from this podcast right there. Who would have thunk it?
Listen, he is a layered man. He has many layers, yeah. Much behind those crazy eyes.
Is he a Kelly Clarkson fan as well? That's the key.
Probably not as much. He probably knows the words just through like proxy, yeah. But no, I wouldn't put him down as a fan.
One of the things I always discuss with WWE people when they come on this podcast, I've had Roman on, I've had Seth Rollins on over the last few months is, one of the things I don't think the fans fully grasp and understand is the schedule that the WWE superstars undertake on a week to week basis. It's just crazy.
Yeah.
The road life, driving after Monday Night Raws to other cities and stuff. So, is it that way for the announcers too and the broadcast? I would imagine it is. I mean, is your schedule a little
lighter? It has been kind of up until recently. So, I mean, when I was just doing commentary on Raw and then I was still doing pay-per-view, so I would drive between the pay-per-view on a Sunday. I would drive to the next town for Monday. Do that, get in a production meeting, and you're in the arena all day long, and then fly back home after that. So, I mean, it's definitely not as bad for the announcers as it is for the wrestlers, because mm-hmm. we're not out doing live events 5 days a week or whatever. But, we're still out there making towns, getting those early morning flights, making long-haul drives, and, it can be grueling. My schedule right now is just funny of, like, doing the show on Tuesdays at Fox in LA and then having to catch a flight to go to SmackDown, wherever that may be. So yeah, we get pulled in a lot of different directions. It's constantly just like hoping that my phone has the information that I need of where I need to be.
And then do you get a decent amount of time with your husband only because like if you're doing this show on Tuesdays, he has his wrestling on Wednesdays. I mean,
yeah, it's interesting right now as you sort of figure that out. I mean, I feel like the past couple of weeks have been really easy because I have not been at SmackDown as much. So we'll see how that kind of plays out. But otherwise, we are home together on the weekends and, he's pretty busy right now. He's still doing some dates in Japan and he's working on a movie right now. So, we figure it out. If I got to fly somewhere to go see him because he's somewhere, he's got to fly somewhere to come see me. We just do that.
Yeah, the life of wrestling people is just the travel life is really just.
I know.
I've gotten to know a couple of wrestlers personally just from doing this, and the stories I hear about like the road and traveling, it's really.
Yeah, it's pretty grueling. It can be a grind for sure. Yeah,
so,
got to have a good eye mask.
Yeah.
Hope for the best.
So. WWE Backstage, the debut is November 5th on FS1. Do you have anything to tease in that first episode? Do we know yet? I mean, it's what, next week? So,
next week.
Is there anything we can preview?
I just know that we've got some big things happening, stuff that I cannot give a nod to. Yes, I do have to talk and sort of very elusively. But, we've got some huge stuff coming up. We are so excited to just get the show off the ground, start doing it weekly, get in our rhythm, get the show out there. And, we're listening to fan feedback as well. We're seeing how people are reacting to things, what people like, what people don't like. But we're gonna have some stuff going on. So I think, I've had so many conversations. People are like, man, we miss talking smack. So I think I hope that this will do that show some justice.
Talking Smack was good. I enjoyed that. I have to
say.
It was
good. I love that show.
Daniel Bryan getting in that confrontation with The Miz was good. So, and you did that show. You did a great interview show for the one. I'm going to knock WWE here, but I'm doing it, not Renee. I feel like they have so many good shows on the network, like interview shows, that are too short. Like, they do that Table for Three way too short.
Yeah.
And then I remember you did an interview show. I remember there was one I
watched
you interview. Yeah, I remember that there was an episode with Dolph Ziggler, who I like a lot, and you guys were in a restaurant eating, and it was 10, 13 minutes. It's like, WWE, can you let these things, we're streaming it, let it go for 30, 40 minutes.
Yeah, I think that's kind of a cool thing, too, is I hope that that's where content is headed back to, is I feel like, kind of when I was doing that show, it was like, everything needs to be sort of shorter content, that's all people want to consume. But I hope that people are starting to go back the other way, where people want more long-form content. I prefer working like that as well. So
I
hope that we can get back to that. I prefer it.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to Backstage on FS1 on November 5th. And
thank you.
I'm glad we got to like chat. Now hopefully we'll meet and
yeah, our friendship is blossoming. We're really doing
it. It's developing. Yeah. I appreciate you coming on and good luck with the show.
Thank you very much.
All right, take care, Renee.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody and everybody. It's spring, and with the weather changing and so many great things coming up like Mother's Day and the Wind Down Tour, I definitely need a fresh spring wardrobe for every occasion. This spring, I'm looking for that perfect flowy spring dress for Mother's Day, as well as replacing my everyday basics. That's what I love about JCPenney. They have so many stylish and comfortable options that I always find just what I'm looking for there. Spring is a feel-good season and comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. The fashion at JCPenney is the same way. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with styles that gets you. Something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at prices that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes, and Stafford and Mutual Weave for him, style and comfort for all, even big and tall. Plus even more for the whole family like Levi's and Exertion. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.
All right, my thanks to Andrew Siciliano and Renee Young. Really enjoyed talking to both of them. Fun conversations with both, like them both a lot, and I'm glad they came on. Check them out on their various gigs, Rugged Zone and WWE Backstage. Remember, subscribe, rate, review. Very important. Helps me a lot. Appreciate it. And my voice is going, so I'm going to wrap up, and I'll see you next week on the SI Media Podcast. Take care.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves. So we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.